We're going to talk about animal cruelty now, just a bit of a trigger warning maybe for some of you. But Alice Lacey is Senior Inspector with the NSPCA and she's in studio with me now. Alice, you've amalgamated with the DSPCA, you're not the ISPCA anymore.
No, thanks Maria for having me on this morning. So on the 1st of October, the ISPCA and the DSPCA, the Dublin SPCA, merged to create one national animal organisation. So we're hoping that we can make an even bigger impact on animal welfare in the country.
It must be so difficult because it seems to be getting worse out there.
I agree with that. You know, for a lot of years before, I did think that things were getting better, but I think it's just the frequency of animal welfare incidents and cruelty that we're even coming across as inspectors, and even other rescues that, you know, that they're coming across as well. It seems to be definitely on the rise, and for a small, tiny country, it's embarrassing, to be honest with you, the amount of cases that we come across of cruelty and neglect. You know,
and you were very instrumental in a recent case that came to court, which led to a lifetime ban for this woman.
Yes, and the defendant received there were 22 charges, and they received 22 four-month custodial sentences, which were to run concurrently. So at the same time, that was suspended for 1 year, and the defendant also received a Section 58 disqualification for life from owning dogs. So that was a great result, because it means that person can no longer have animals, be in the possession of them, be around them or surrounded by them. Yeah.
'Cause some people just, it all gets out of control on them, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think what happens a lot of the time is this particular case was essentially a hoarding situation. And over time, the number of animals increased, and with that, welfare, any type of welfare standard started to drop, and that's where the cruelty and the neglect came in. So definitely a situation that got hugely out of control, and ultimately the animals were the ones that suffered.
And that's the point, isn't it? Because there's lots of people who they keep loads of animals, they're doing their best, but their best isn't good enough. And the animal, which is the focal point of this, is the thing that's suffering.
Exactly. And there was one dog in particular in this case. And I know a year and a half has actually passed now since the initial inspections. That particular animal had never really left my mind the last year and a half. It was even giving evidence in court last week. It was a lurcher that was euthanized when he was found immobile on the property, and he had a lot of serious wounds from lying in the one position. And even recounting that in court was extremely hard. You know, I only met this dog for a brief moment in time before he had to be put to sleep. But I knew that we had some hand in just essentially releasing him from that suffering, you know. Yeah. And I think to get these cases before the courts are extremely important. I'm hoping it's a deterrent for people that they'll understand they need to respect animals. They are the... You know, animals look up to us to take care of them. We are solely responsible for their care. And these are the consequences when you don't, when you don't take care of them properly.
And it's for you to say that about that dog, knowing what you must see every day of your working life. I actually don't know how you do your job. Hats off to you, because it's, I don't think I'd be yeah. able to do it. It must take a particular strength to do it.
It does, and I think that particular case, it still affects me to this day, but I'm glad that there's been an outcome in court. I think that you do take those things home with you. You know, you don't forget them. We want to save every animal that we take. Unfortunately for this particular dog in this case, that wasn't the outcome, but at least I knew that we could do something to ease the suffering he had gone through. You know, it's hard to deal with a lot of the time. You tend to repress those feelings and emotions because you need to get the job done at the end of the day. But it's it's a balancing act a lot of the time, you know, to not absolutely, I don't mean lose it, but you're trying to remain composed all the time in order to do the job efficiently.
Mm. And you do have the power now to remove animals, which you didn't always have, I think.
We didn't always have that. So we're authorised officers now since the introduction of the Animal Health and Welfare Act. That came, it's the Animal Health and Welfare Act 2013, but it came into force in March 2014. That allows us to, just without an owner's consent, if there are serious welfare issues, to seize animals. It also allows us to, not a dwelling house, but it allows us to inspect, if we have reason to believe there may be welfare issues, to inspect a property, outhouses, sheds, things like that. So it's given us a lot more leeway with regard to what we can do immediately when we attend a welfare call. Mm.
We're a strange country, aren't we? Because I was looking at the news last night and all the dogs being brought into the church to be blessed in one instance, and people, dogs getting Christmas stockings now, and pets getting spoiled, and, you know, there's that, there's those people in Ireland, and then we're the puppy farm capital of Europe, because which is, it's absolutely horrendous to me that there's so many dogs need a home, and there's people who are just churning out dog after dog. They don't care about the dog, they don't care about the dog's welfare. The like, that to me is, well, the, you know, this case is cruel. It doesn't sound to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that she intended to be cruel. It was just neglect. She was overwhelmed, whereas the people who just don't care, those animals are just product, they're a money making, they don't care, breeding bitches time after time after time, and no welfare, no nothing. It makes me sick.
Yes, you're completely right. And I think you know, in Ireland, we, it's actually disheartening that every year at this time of the year we send out the same message about buying puppies. A lot of people forget where those puppies came from, and I'm talking about the mothers that bore them. You know, I'm not saying that anybody that buys a puppy is going to be cruel to them. Many of these animals that are bought and purchased go into loving, wonderful homes. But it's a huge issue in this country. I'm talking about the backyard breeders and the ones that we still don't yet know about. That's why we always urge people to report if they think that, you know, if they think that there's cruelty going on, or a dog breeding establishment or something like that. But it's still a huge issue, as I said, for such a small country. You know, you don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
Why, but they have, you're supposed to have a license to do this. Why is anyone getting a license to do it?
So what happens in Ireland is, with the legislation, if you were somebody that was not consciously breeding, but you still had 10 dogs.
Okay.
If you have over 6 female dogs in Ireland capable of breeding, you're technically classed as a dog breeding establishment, even if you're not breeding for profit or for sale. You know, we call to people, you know, every week that have numbers like that. So there are a number of registered DBEs. There are dog breeding establishments in Ireland, and they used to be governed by the local authority, but now that's moved to the Department of Agriculture. But it's the ones that are, it's also, the, you know, those dog breeding establishments that can also have welfare issues as well. But it's the ones that people are, you know, indiscriminately breeding, that are not registered, that the authorities are not aware of. Mm. They're getting away with a lot, you know. And it's just, you know, we've come across many of them over the years, managed to shut a number of them down with the local authorities. But I definitely think more needs to be done, not even to curb this, but to stop this completely.
Mm. And we're talking about dogs now. Horses, beautiful, beautiful creatures. There was a time that, you know, they were treasured, and they kept the country going when we didn't have, like, tractors and all of that. Now they're nothing.
It's like the, you know, if you love animals, the value of an animal, you know, does not go down. Mm. But as regards, you know, money making and breeding and things like that, it's now a lot of the time it's like they're not worth anything anymore, you know. But they're sentient beings; they rely on us, and we need to provide for them. That's the bottom line. If we can't do that, I know it's very cliche saying, if you can't take care of an animal, well, then don't have one. But so many people have animals in this country that are not capable of taking care of them. And I guess that's where education and everything like that comes in as well from our side. We don't just do welfare calls on people. We're trying to educate them at the same time. Yeah. we instruct people to do certain things to improve their, the welfare of their animals. We don't want them to do something because we're instructing them to do it. In the at the very end, we want them to understand why they're doing it, and to maintain that, and to understand that they're improving, you know, their animals' lives. You know,
like I used to go horse riding, and I've loved horses all my life. I could probably saddle a horse now, but I couldn't tell you how to take care of it. I've never groomed a horse. I've never cleaned tack. I think I've mucked out a stable once, but I wouldn't know how to care for an animal that I would love, but that animal might suffer because of my ignorance. And some people they just think, ah, sure, there's a field, into the field. There's loads of grass there. Be grand. Bucket of water. Be grand. Oh, the water may be. The horse drank the water. I never filled it up. I sure it'll rain.
Yes.
You know, they just don't think in terms of what you need to know before you get a particular type of animal.
Exactly. And even, you know, obviously the basics for any animal, food, water and shelter. But people also need to be aware of animal welfare is multifaceted. It isn't just feed your dog, water your dog and provide shelter. It's vet treatment when they need it. It's also... it's also catering for their mental and their physiological well-being, stimulation for them. It's more than just doing the basics, you know.
And it's unfortunate that they're also, you know, they're also cute, that you don't think about that and you just think, ah, that's lovely. And then you have this dog that's screaming at you because it hasn't been out for a walk in the last 7 days.
Yes.
Or a horse that, you know, has suddenly developed some issue that you should have foreseen if you knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
But you didn't. You just went by the look of this animal and how much that you wanted it without any care really about what was in the best interest of the animal.
Exactly. And I know we say it time and time again, any animal, whether it's horse, dog, cat, small furries, you know, I know a lot of people don't, but do your research before you take one of these animals that are a lifelong commitment into your lives, and you know, make sure you're aware of how to adequately take care of and provide for them at all times.
How did you get into this job, Alice? Can I ask you?
I had a very different background in marketing 13 years ago, but animal welfare was always in the back of my mind. And I parked the marketing side of things, and I essentially started volunteering. Shout out to the previous Waterford SPCA, we're still based in the city. I basically started volunteering, answering the phone, taking in cruelty calls, the same cruelty calls that I'm now out on the road doing. A position came up a year and a half later for an ISPCA inspector covering County Waterford and South Tipperary. And I went for that, and that was, well, I can't believe it's been 10 years, but it's been 10 years now, you know. And I'd like to think that we are making a difference in some way. If I can come home at the end of the day and say, I've done my best today, I feel like hopefully that's enough.
And when you remember Alice Lacey from 10 years ago going to her first case, like, how different is she?
I think... I'm quite an emotional person, and most importantly, I have a lot of empathy. That never changed. I think I've managed to curb my emotions a lot more when I'm dealing with horrendous cases, because I know that the job is, you know, there's a job at hand I need to get done.
Yeah.
I can think about how I feel about it afterwards. So I think I've become a stronger and more resilient person really over the last 10 years. And I still, at the end of all of it, no matter how harrowing it is, I still love every aspect of my job.
And do you still feel like, do you get training to be able to kind of deal with the emotional part of it?
So,
is that part of the training?
It's actually something we've talked about quite a lot. We had training a number of years ago now for compassion fatigue. It's essentially working in a job that can affect you quite mentally, and you have to, you know, you have to learn to kind of deal with those emotions. We will be having more of that training in the future, hopefully. But working in welfare, as well as other sectors and other jobs as well, it can definitely take its toll, both mentally and physically sometimes as well. And, you know, I always say to myself, if I'm not feeling 100%, that I'm not going to go out on the road and do my best job, you know. So we're definitely looking at more of that training anyway, because it's important that our health and welfare is good as well, you know.
And it must be very rewarding to, even if it ends up with an animal being euthanized, that you've literally put it out of its misery. That's what we always do say, I put it out of its misery. But you've literally caused that to happen, because that dog can't be saved, or that horse can't be saved, or that animal is just in too much pain and is beyond help. But do you ever get to see animals that you might have confiscated, and they've gone to new homes? And because they're particularly dogs, I think, are so forgiving that once they get any kind of a break at all, they can really like bounce back and just be loving life again like a dog should.
Yes. Thankfully, one of the things I love about the job is I do keep in contact with a lot of people that have adopted from us. And every time I get a WhatsApp message or an email with photos of, you know, an animal that I've saved at some point in time, to see how they're like a completely different animal, whether it be dog, cat or horse. That's also what makes it worthwhile. Like, everything has come full circle. From the first time I got that welfare call, to removing an animal, to the rehabilitation process and eventually rehoming, to see the end result of that, it actually spurs you on to, you know, to just keep going.
You must be very strong. I don't think I could do it. I'd be too emotional. I'd kill people.
It's very hard
just
not
lose
to.
My temper.
Sometimes my blood is absolutely boiling, but I kind of try and mask that because I know I'm not going to get very far. I certainly do, in another type of way, let people know exactly how I feel about them, or what they've done or what they haven't done. But I know that, you know, if I lost it every time I did a welfare call, I just don't think that's the right approach to it, really, you know, in order to get changes made or to get the work done.
And if I was in a position of power, I could gift you one thing that would revolutionise animal welfare in this country. Can you think of what the best thing, if it was one thing, or even more than one thing? What would you like to see change?
I think the whole issue, to be honest, even being asked that question, there are so many things. If I can name, I guess, a few of them. One thing, a huge issue in Ireland is, and I know a lot of rescues offer this as well, you know, they would subsidise the likes of neutering and everything like that. There are huge issues in Ireland with regard to feral cat populations, with regard to overbreeding. There's enough dogs in rescue centres to last a lifetime, and then in backyards they're being bred every day of the week. I wish people were more on board, members of the public, with neutering their animals. It would at least stem the overpopulation. I think, as regards, you know, even after court cases, training or resources being made available to people who have been convicted, like that they should be put through, you know, some form of an animal welfare course, that they can kind of, learn from their mistakes. Things like that. I'm trying to think of everything now, but obviously, I would hope that the whole world of animal welfare would change in Ireland. Sometimes I sit in the van and I just think to myself, I could do 5 calls every day, and each one of them, there's some welfare issue. And that's just one day out of 365 days in the year. You get discouraged sometimes that you can't, you feel like you can't do more, you know.
Wouldn't you love to see a day when every rescue place was just empty? The people were putting their feet up for a well-deserved rest, because, by God, those rescue centres work very hard. And just that they're empty, because if somebody wants a dog, that's where they'll go.
Yeah.
They'll go to a rescue centre.
And that's the one time I would say I would be happy that I'm out of a job, because there would be, you know, if cruelty was no more, I don't see a day where that will happen. Rescue centres, and not just our centres, other rescues that work night and day saving and rescuing animals, they're nearly always full to capacity, whether that be abandoned animals, surrendered animals, cruelty cases. It's like it's a never-ending cycle, you know. You've got to keep going, and the only way is through. That's it.
I feel particularly sorry for people in the current climate who have to move out of their house, and where they're moving to they can't have an animal. And what, like, it's hard enough to get a house. And if you can't get a family member to just mind the dog for you, hopefully things will, you know, improve. But they have to actually surrender their dogs. And you know, another thing as well, I think for elderly people in homes, like who've had a little dog all their life.
Yes.
And they don't get to take them now. They don't get to take them in. Now, I'm sure all the nursing homes are listening to me going, like, yeah, the last time we need memory is dealing with dog hair and dog poo and cat hair and all of that. But, you know, a little companion you've had all your life.
Exactly.
And because of the circumstance you find yourself in, where you're in somewhere like this, you don't get to have that. Now, I know there's charities who bring dogs into places and it goes down a bomb, like...
It does. And even when you said about the, you know, the dog hair and everything like that, that comes part and parcel with having it, you know, with having a pet. And, you know, a lot of rescues, including ourselves, are receiving those calls, you know, as regards landlords not allowing their tenants to have pets and everything like that. If you can imagine having a dog, let's say, for 12 years and all of a sudden you're moving and you're not allowed to take them, that not only affects the person, but also the animal, maybe finding themselves the following week in a rescue centre, their whole world is turned upside down and their owner may have exhausted all avenues to try and keep that animal with them. That is something that I would love to, you know, to change. If somebody is a good and well-meaning animal owner, and they assure that their landlord that they will take care of the property, that there won't be any damage done, there's wear and tear is always going to happen, you know, in a rented property. Animals, the likes of cats, they're actually very clean. If they have their litter trays and where to go to the toilet. Same with dogs. I mean, I don't see why allowances can't be made for these people, because it's creating a huge welfare issue as well, that a lot of them are ending up in rescues.
And at an emotional time where you know you have to move somewhere, maybe you didn't want to move or you don't want to live in the place you're going into, and now one of the things that you loved in life, you have to get rid of because you. And some people have children. It's easy to say, well, I wouldn't get rid of my dog if I had to move. Sometimes you have to make a tough decision like that, and it must be heartbreaking.
It must be, and as you said, it's hard enough. I mean, you know, housing, even trying to get a mortgage in this day and age is hard enough, that people are forced to have to rent and pay big, you know, rent prices every month. And to add to that, the possibility of having their animal rehomed, you know.
Fair play to you, Alice. Hats off to you for the job that you do, and well done for the way that you do it and the fact that you're so strong at it.
Thank you.
And that is Alice Lacey, Senior Inspector with the newly named NSPCA. And best of luck to you in your job, and mind yourself as well, because it must be very difficult.
Thank you so much, Maria.
To leave that home. Have you animals at home?
One dog. He's 14, little terrier. Yeah,
does
still going strong.
Sniff you when you go home going, where were you today, Mom?
That's the same thing every day. Yeah.
Thanks a million for coming in. Have
no
the chat.
Thanks
me, Alice.
So much.
Really appreciate
Thank
it
you.
And happy Christmas to you.
That,
as I said, Alice Lacey, Senior Inspector with the NSPCA, there back after these.